I just wanted to share for a few minutes on Joshua. I don't know if you've got heroes in the Bible, heroes, heroines in the Bible, and people in the Bible who you really look to and you think, oh, Joshua is one of mine. And the more I sort of study him and look at him, the more I think, wow, what ought to be a bit like Joshua. And I just want to pull out a few instances from his life that I think are appropriate for us, whether we're young or old. Things that he did, things that took place in his life. And I just want to pull these out briefly. We first come across Joshua, we first come across him in Exodus 17, but in Numbers 11, verse 28, it says, Joshua, the son of Nun, the assistant of Moses from his youth. So the first thing we know about Joshua is that he served Moses from his youth. From being a young man, he looked to Moses, he learnt from Moses, he served Moses. The actual first encounter we have in the scriptures with Joshua is actually in Exodus 17. And in Exodus 17, it says, Amalek came and fought with Israel at Rephidim. So Moses said to Joshua, choose for us men and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand. So Joshua did as Moses told him and fought with Amalek, while Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And you know the story continues where Aaron and Hur hold Moses' arms up. But Joshua, still a young man at that stage, is fighting a battle for the people of Israel, a battle that Moses has sent him into. But my first, the thing that first struck me about Moses that I think is appropriate, sorry, about Joshua, that I think is appropriate for all of us, is in the, later in Exodus. Because in Exodus 24, the Lord says to Moses, come up to me on the mountain and wait there, that I may give you the tablets of stone with the law and the commandment which I've written for their instruction. So Moses rose with his assistant Joshua, and Moses went up into the mountain of God. And again, Joshua was with Moses going up into the mountain of God. I don't know about you, but when I'm praying sometimes, I sort of pray, oh Lord, it'd be so much easier if you'd just show yourself and tell me what you wanted me to do. It would just be so much easier. But I think it would also be just a little bit awesome and a little bit scary. And in Exodus 33, they've come back from the mountain. Moses has taken this tent and he's pitched it outside the camp, far off from the camp. And this is extraordinary. I just want you to picture this. You'll have heard it before, but I don't know, sometimes when we hear things before, we lose something of what is going on. He called it the tent of meeting. Everyone who sought the Lord would go out into the tent of meeting, which was outside the camp. Whenever Moses went out to the tent, all the people would rise up. Each would stand at his tent door. Just think about that for a minute. Thousands of people standing at the tent door because they know that Moses has gone to the tent of meeting, the place of meeting with God. And they're standing at their tent door, and then when Moses entered the tent, the pillar of cloud would descend and stand at the entrance of the tent, and the Lord would speak with Moses. And when all the people saw the pillar of cloud standing at the entrance of the tent, all the people would rise up and worship each at his tent door. Thus, the Lord used to speak to Moses face to face, as a man speaks to his friend. Do you not find that extraordinary? Do you not sort of both long for it and think, oh, I'm not sure. But that sense that when Moses is speaking to God, he's speaking to him face to face. But the bit that I really, that sometimes we miss, when Moses turned again into the camp, his assistant, Joshua, son of Nun, a young man, would not depart from the tent. And I don't know about you, but anybody who knows me knows I'm quite an activist. I struggle to sit still. I like to do that. I struggle to sit still. And I think Joshua was quite an active. He's already had a battle at this stage. You know, he's not someone who maybe, you know, sits around. He does things. And yet, what does he do when Moses leaves the tent? He stays. He stays in the presence of God. And sometimes we just rush away too soon. Sometimes we don't stay in that place of encounter where God can speak to us, where he can show us maybe some of the things we need to change, some of the attitudes, where maybe some of the fruits of the Spirit that we need to do a bit of work on. We rush away. And so the first thing, I just think, for all of us, are we practicing staying in the presence of God? Are we practicing listening to what he's saying to us? After this time, we move on in the story of the people of Israel. And we get to Numbers 13. And Moses sends spies out into the land of Canaan. He's sending the spies out. And he sends out these 12 spies, and Joshua was one of those spies. And again, we know what happens. After 40 days, the spies return from spying out the land. And they came to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the people of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation. They showed them the fruit of the land, and they told them, "We came to the land to which you sent us. It flows with milk and honey." It's quite a place. It's quite a place. It flows with milk and honey. And this is its fruit. "However, the people who dwell in the land are strong, and the cities are fortified and very large. And besides, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the Negev. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the hill country. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and all along the Jordan." But Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and occupy it, for we are well able to overcome it." Then the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they're stronger than we are." So they brought to the people of Israel a bad report that they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone to spy it out is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people we saw it of great height." They're giants. "We saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak, who came from the Nephilim, and we seemed to ourselves like grasshoppers, and so we seemed to them." So the 12 spies go, and 10 of those spies say, no, "We can't go. It's too big. They're giants. We can't do it." You know what? And they were right. They couldn't do it in their own strength. They couldn't do it. A little bit later, they tried to do it because they realized they'd got it wrong and they'd offended God. So they tried to do it in their own strength, and they got thumped. They couldn't do it in their own strength. They were right. But Moses and Aaron fell on their face before the assembly of the congregation, and Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb, who were among them, who had spied out the land, tore their clothes and said to all the congregation, the people of Israel, "The land which we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. The Lord, if the Lord delights in us, if the Lord delights in us, we can do this. If the Lord is with us, anything is possible." See, Joshua had got to know the Lord in that tent. And he knew that if God was with them, it didn't matter how big the giants were. It didn't matter how many the grasshoppers, how much they looked like grasshoppers to the land. They could do it if God was with them. He had the faith. Do you see giants or do you see opportunities? Do you see giants or do you see opportunities? Do you see the reason not to do something or the reason to do something? You know, this passage shows us that the majority can be wrong. The majority can be wrong. And they then tried to take the land in their own strength, and they got beaten. You might remember that children's song. "He didn't bring us out this far to take us back again. He brought us out to lead us into the promised land. Though there be giants in the land, we will not be afraid. Though there be giants in the land, we will not be afraid." See, Joshua wasn't afraid because he'd spent time with God. His faith was high. He could see the opportunity, not the giants. And then moving on, Deuteronomy 31, Moses hears from God that Joshua is to succeed him. He commissions him. Moses summons Joshua, said to him in the sight of all Israel, "Be strong and courageous, for you shall go with the people into the land that the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, and shall put them in possession." This is 40 years later. They've had their 40 years in the desert because they wouldn't have faith. And now they're going into the promised land. And he says, "He will be with you. He will not leave you or forsake you." And the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, the days approach when you must die. Call Joshua, present yourselves in the tent of meeting, that I may commission him and Moses and Joshua went and presented themselves in the tent of meeting, and the Lord appeared in the tent in a pillar of cloud and commissioned Joshua. In terms of succession planning, you couldn't get it much better, really, could you? An assistant who's been there all the way through, who's seen all these battles, who's seen the bad things and the good things, who's stood alongside Moses all the way, and who gets to this commission where he's commissioned by God. You know, we had a commissioning tonight where we commissioned these guys on behalf of us, and we prayed that God would commission them. But Joshua had the commissioning where sort of God turns up in person and commissions him. And yet still, he needs the be strong and courageous. Be strong and courageous. Joshua 1, when you start at Joshua 1, be strong and courageous. You know, and sometimes we don't see God move because we don't take risks. We don't trust that God can do more than we can ask or imagine, and that actually faith is about taking a risk. Final couple of things. In Joshua 3, verse 5, Joshua is now the leader, and he says to the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. See, when we set ourselves apart, when we are commissioned, whether it's to be a street pastor, whether it's to serve in some other way in our churches or in our community, when we are set apart, when we consecrate ourselves before God and say, God, we are setting ourselves apart for you to use us as you want in the places you want to use us, God does wonders. God does wonders. Consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. It's not us that's going to be doing wonders. It's the Lord that will do wonders among us, among our churches. An extraordinary thing might take place, and it will be God. And the next day, they crossed the Jordan. The symbol of leaving, of going into the Exodus, of leaving Egypt, was crossing the Red Sea as the Red Sea parted and they ended up in the desert. 40 years later, they left the desert by the Jordan parting, and they left and marched into the Promised Land. And as they crossed into the Jordan, in chapter 4, Joshua 4, God tells them to take some stones from the middle of the river and make them into a pile to remember what God has done. And in verse 6 of chapter 4, it says that they may be assigned to you when the children ask in time to come, what do these stones mean to you? Then you shall tell them the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord when it passed over the Jordan. The waters of the Jordan were cut off. So these stones shall be to the people of Israel a memorial forever. Remember what God has done. You know, we don't know the future. We don't know where God is taking us as individuals, as churches, as a community. But we do know the past. We do know God's faithfulness. We have our church buildings. This one's been here 900 years. I keep telling Toby it's a bit older than the one on the green. But, you know, the Methodist, I love the story of the Methodist church. The one I've been told is that the Methodists were kicked out of Oxford and told they had to go at least 10 miles. And they found Whitney, and that's where they came. You know, and I love that history element of faithfulness, of Wesley speaking up on the green. We've seen that in the past. We can mark it. We can say these stones mark the faithfulness of God in the past. But we're not to live in the past. We're to press into the promised land, whatever is ahead, trusting God for the future. Remember what God has done, but press into the future. And as we press into the future, one final story from Joshua. And that's Caleb. Don't you just love Caleb? In Joshua 14, Caleb comes to Joshua. And he says to him, you know that the Lord said to Moses, the man of God in Kadesh Barnea, concerning you and me, I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land. And I brought him word again as it was in my heart. But my brothers who went up with me made the heart of the people melt. Yet I wholly followed the Lord my God. And Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land on which your foot has trodden shall be inheritance for you and your children forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord my God. And now, behold, the Lord has kept me alive, just as he said, these 45 years since the times that the Lord spoke the word to Moses, while Israel walked in the wilderness. And now, behold, I am this day 85 years old. I am still as strong today as I was in that day that Moses sent me. My strength now is my strength was then, for war and for going and coming. So now give me this hill country of which the Lord spoke on that day, for you heard on that day how the Anakim were there with great fortified cities. It may be that the Lord will be with me, and I shall drive them out, just as the Lord said. That's the sort of 85-year-old I want to be like. That's the one who's saying, there's still another hill. There's still another hill. I'm not sure I'll be as strong as I was when I was 40, but now that was Caleb's faith. It wasn't that the best days were in the past. It was that the future is still a promised land and that I'm going to press into it and into all that God still has for me. And so what does Joshua do to what must have been one of his oldest friends? He blesses him. He blesses him. Who's your oldest friend who's blessing you? Who's encouraging you in the hill countries that you're seeking to take? The one who's saying, go for it. Go for it. God is with you. So let's pursue the presence of God. Let's see the opportunities, not the giants. Let's be strong and courageous. Let's consecrate ourselves so that God can do wonders. And let's celebrate the acts of God for the sake of our children. And let's still take mountains when we're in our 80s. Amen.